Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to IFHPodcastNetwork.com.
Welcome to the Successful Screenwriter Podcast, where we discuss anything and everything screenwriting. Here we interview successful screenwriters and filmmakers to find out just what it takes to make it in the industry. Just a heads up, this episode is brought to you by my book, The Guide for Every Screenwriter, which has been listed as one of the best screenwriting books of all time by The Book Authority. If you're looking for something that reveals the secrets of screenwriting in an easy to understand and engaging way, then this is the book for you. You can find The Guide for Every Screenwriter at thesuccessfulscreenwriter.com/books now. On to the show. Welcome to the podcast. Today we have on an awesome guest, international bestseller, author, and screenwriter, Michael Brent Collings. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome. I'm stoked to be here.
Well, I love getting people on the show that have really taken their writing to the next level. And then if you can get to the point to where you're making a living at it, that is awesome. And I know that's something that listeners out there want to hear about. So before we kind of launch into your path of really monetizing your success as a screenwriter, as an author, I want to get a little bit of your origin story.
Well, my parents were murdered in an, no, I had a, my origin story is like a lot of people. It's like, I knew I was destined for mediocrity. And instead of that, I turned to being a lawyer and was not very good at that. You know, I was a passable lawyer, but I always knew I wanted to write, you know, and the reason I was a lawyer is I didn't want to be that person who's like 52 years old, living in his mom's basement, inviting women over and being like, hey, I'm going to make it big, you know, which is totally fine. Like some people are okay with that. I was risk averse. So I became a lawyer and I wrote on the side. And by the on the side, I was a partner at a Los Angeles law firm. And the hours you hear about that are absolutely true.
Wow.
So I'd be, you know, at work at 6 a.m. and I'd work till 6 p.m. kind of thing. And then I'd go home and play with my family. And then I'd write from 10 till 2 and then do the whole thing over again. And I did that for a decade and finally started to kind of get some traction, mostly with screenwriting. I did really well in the Nickel 1 year. I had more screenplays go to the semi and quarterfinals than anybody ever had.
Amazing.
And so that kind of rolled over and became, I sold some screenplays and they actually got made. And I love to tell people, like, just so you know, through the magic of Hollywood, these amazing screenplays turned into movies that were definitely movies. Like that was, you know,
action pieces.
Well, stuff changed in the screenwriting between the screenplay and the movie, which happens, you know, and some people that's crushing enough that they're just like, I'm out, you know, but I always looked at this as I'm making hamburgers. Like people talk about books and movies as their babies and I have children and my screenplays are not as important as those, you know, so
right.
I was fine when they changed stuff. My big question was always kind of like, is the check going to clear? And then you can do whatever you want. And I think that's an important attitude to have is if you're going to be more precious about your work, it's going to be harder to keep working because you run into problems. You know, you have to accommodate to realities. And one of the realities was that the economy changed. I lost my law job. I wasn't selling another screenplay and we're poor. So I very quickly started writing books based on some of my screenplays.
Okay.
And I sent one of them to literally every single publisher in North America, every single agent in North America who would handle that stuff, that kind of genre, and was told ranging from nicely to please set yourself on fire and take this out of the world. God. No, thank you. You know, so I have 2 4-inch binders of single page rejections. And I didn't really know what to do after that, you know? So a friend of mine calls up and he's like, hey, you should try, there's this new thing called a Kindle.
Yeah.
And I looked it up and I was like, hey, this is kind of fun and my books won't hurt anybody. It's not like I'm writing mean, nasty stuff. So I'll just put it there and it'll sit there and at least I've done something with it.
Yeah.
And the results just astounded me. Like the first month, I kid you not, I sold probably, I don't know, 6 copies, all of which were undoubtedly to my mom. You know, she like starts all these sock puppet accounts to buy different copies. Well, you know, moms are like, it's in the United States Constitution. I'm pretty sure they have to support you, you know? And so I'm keeping looking for work and I'm still writing on the side and I'm doing everything I can. We were on government assistance. It was a really rough time. And then 6 months later, my friend, the same one who had said, hey, you should put on Kindle, he calls up and says, can you tell Amazon to stop emailing me about your book, please? And I had no freaking clue what he was talking about. So I went on and it turned, I still don't know what happened, but it turned out that book that I had written off of a screenplay was now the number one horror and number one science fiction title on all of Amazon.
What book was that?
Incredibly. It was called Run. And it's interesting because it kind of did me a disservice because I thought, I know what I'm doing, you know, like I'm going to make it big and I'm going to roll over in the morning. My big job will be rolling over so they can cover a different side of me with gold. You know, like that was kind of the image I had. And I proceeded to write more and write more. And the next 3 or 4 books, again, I'm back to my mom being like, I made a new Amazon account for you. You know, it was really terrible. So it was a struggle. And I don't want people to be like, well, I didn't make it in movies, so I'm going to make $1 billion in books, because I do always have to tell people, as hard as I worked as a partner at a Los Angeles law firm, I work way harder as a writer. But I still do the same process now. I'll write a screenplay and I'll write a book at the same time. And they very often grow up together. Sometimes I'll write one first and then, you know, I'll write the book and then write the script, or I'll write the script and write the book off of it. And sometimes it's kind of simultaneous, but I'm always doing both. And I found it's really good because money does come in from Hollywood, but it's very sporadic.
Okay.
And when you can get a foot in the door and get really established, especially as an indie, you know, if you're a traditionally published writer, you get published every 6 months typically, and it's for stuff you did 4 years ago. And right. As an indie, I get paid monthly by all of the different ebook retailers that I work with. And I'm going to get that every, you know, 28th, 29th, 30th of every month. So I can sort of count on it. And the amounts fluctuate. There's goods and bads. It's not like...
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about this for a second, because I mean, I have a book, right? I have The Guide for Every Screenwriter, and it's a bestseller. It's hit number one on the Book Authority of best screenwriting books of all time. So like, I'm with you on the indie published, the self-published indie writer, right? Here's the conundrum I ran into, and I want to get your thoughts on it. At one point when I was advertising the book, it felt like for every dollar I was spending on advertising is what I would get in sales. So I couldn't make that kind of profit on the book until I started really leveraging the community. And so I want to get your opinion. Like, how did you kind of break out of that cycle?
How do I leverage that? First of all, it's a pay-for-play environment more and more. Okay. Right. Amazon has rooms full of smart people figuring out how to suck every last penny from everybody in the world, you know, and eventually it's going to be Amazon and it's going to be Apple, and whoever wins that fight is going to be Skynet. And then we have Terminator basically, but right now that's kind of what they're doing. And so I know, I 100% know from my own experience, like if you put money into the Amazon coffers as an author through your advertising, you know, you get this readout of all this metrics that's like, you spent X and you made X off of this. And right. In reality, you have to look at the big picture, because like I might lose $50 on advertising on this book, but if I take the advertising down, I lose 200 across the board.
Yeah.
So there's got to be something in their algorithm that's like, if this author's paying us a little bit of his royalties back, let's push him a little harder because we're going to get more.
Gotcha.
So the reality is you're going to have to pay for some of your advertising. But then one of the things I really encourage is get yourself that community you were talking about, because you do have to have it. I have a newsletter list. And if you like, you know, if you sign up for this, you get put on my newsletter, but it's a good newsletter. And that's part of it, is I'm providing a benefit in every piece of writing I do. I'm never like just commercial. It's me.
Right.
Like my newsletter list, I give lists of free books. I do giveaways of Kindles and signed books and like lots that's of awesome. Stuff. And as a result of that, I have a 30,000 person newsletter list subscriber or subscriber list. So I'm an author. I use words good. I have a big subscriber list, and that's what pushes my books up high enough that Amazon then notices it or Apple notices it or whatever. And they start helping to push. You definitely have to have an audience and you have to have a base, because like the old days where I was in Kindle, you know, I was up on number one,
right?
And those sales numbers today, that wouldn't get me in the top 100. It just wouldn't. So it's very competitive, and it is a job. You know, if you're like, well, waitering was hard, but screenwriting was harder, so I'm going to do the book thing because that's super easy. It's not. It's just as much work.
Yeah, you're your own publicist. You're your own marketer. You know, it's sometimes you're your own like book cover editor, or book cover, I don't know, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's pretty crazy all of the time you put into it. And that's not even including, you know, social media hours and everything else that you're really dipping into it. And if, you know, if you're doing reels or TikToks, I mean, it's crazy how you have to try and keep up with everything to really stay on top of exposure. And I think that's kind of what we're discussing, is really getting that exposure. And it sounds like you're doing it through creating that email list by adding value, which I think is really important.
And here's another thing I do want to plug. It's like when COVID started, my family, we're not rich, but we're okay. So we all sat down, we're like, what can we do? And everybody's losing their jobs and everybody is stuck inside. So we went out and we put up on our list, all my books are now 99 cents, 100% of them, box sets, everything you can get, I've written for, you know, $40. And that'll get you through this whole 2 years.
Yeah.
And we figured that we could do that for about a week, just because the way Amazon's price points are made, the royalties were about 90% hit per unit. And so we're like, in a week or two, we'll have to stop because, you know, food and stuff. And we ended up keeping it for a year and a half.
Wow.
And the reason was the response was so overwhelming. People were so struck, like somebody actually cares.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, I don't even like horror, but buy this guy's stuff. Well, I don't like horror, but he's nice. Okay, I guess I like horror now. And all these people responded to it, because one thing that I do really encourage is part of the value you add is yourself. You know, there's your books, there's the free book lists that I send out, there's the Kindles and things, but mostly it's like people write to me and say, it's so nice to get an email from someone who is just nice. We have really kind of overvalued vitriol and meanness and zingers and, did you see that YouTuber, get the other guy?
Yeah.
And if you can just be out there, look, you can't control how successful you are. You can't control if someone in the room is a better writer than you are. You can't do any of that. There's too many variables, but you can control this. You can say, I'm going to walk into this interaction, be it a meeting, an email to a fan, whatever, and I am going to be the nicest and most professional person in the room. And if you could do those two things, people start to notice, because the world is full of very talented people. So they're like, well, I can work with this talented person or this person, and they have the same talent. Actually, this one's a little more talented, but he's terrible to work with. This guy, I'll deal with the 5% talent cut, because he's just a delight and he makes me laugh and I don't have to feel like he's going to punch me, you know?
Yeah.
And we really need that. So the nicer and more professional you can be, just show up on time, have your words ready, be helpful. You know, I don't talk trash about producers. People, I go to comic cons and writers will be like, producers are the worst. And my immediate response is, producers make us jobs. Like they give us work. And no producer in the world has ever sat down and been like, how can we make this movie terrible so that it makes no money whatsoever?
I actually really like working with a difficult producer, because I know it sounds crazy, but I'm going to say, because I love a challenge. Like my brain is on fire when a producer comes to me and puts me in a really small sandbox and says, this is only where you can play. This is it. I get really excited about it. I go, oh my God, this is amazing. I don't think anybody else could solve this, but I think I can. And I come up with the craziest, like coolest ideas. And then we make them happen and they're always happy with it. So
yes.
I think it's the attitude on how you approach it. Cause you can easily be the artist and say, well, how dare you limit me, sir? But you're not going to find more work that way.
No, it's extraordinarily. You want to be the person who like just shows up and they're like, oh, the lone gunman just walked in from every John Wayne movie. Like he doesn't say much. He just shoots down the bad guys and then leaves.
Yeah.
And you want to be that person. Only I'm like the lone gunman that like walks in and I try and shoot the bad guys and then I'll make a fart joke and walk away, you know? So they're like, ha ha ha, he did a good job. Yeah. You want that. And, you know, I remember a science experiment I saw once in school that really impacted me. The teacher had this cylinder of metal and he pushed down a plunger and there was a light at the bottom. And he said, what you saw was I hyper-compressed the air molecules and it overheated to the point of creating light.
Cool.
And it was super cool. And it taught me the more restrictions you have, the more you can shine. You know, it's typically everyone goes, why did that person make that movie that was the vanity piece? And they all fall apart. You know what you always hear about is like, true. This movie was so hard to put together. Everybody disagreed. Everybody was yelling. And we made 17 Academy Awards and somebody got slapped. It was a marvelous night. You know, it's when you're having the struggles that you're forced to be more creative. So yeah, looking at them, not as like this person's difficult or I better make some money or my family's going to starve. It's you can let that stress overwhelm you, or you can sit down and be like, I've got to be my most creative today. I've got to solve this problem. And wonderful things happen.
I think it's a maturity level as a writer. If you are so confident and well-versed in your ability or craft as a writer that someone presents you with a challenge and you're excited about it and you step up to that challenge, you're ready for that challenge. If somebody walks up to you and gives you that challenge and you're like, hold on a second, then you're not there yet. And there's no shame in that. I mean, I know back in the day, I wouldn't have been able to do it. I was like, oh, you can't limit my creativity. Now I'm like, I need parameters. Tell me what I can't do. What do I work in? So tell me a little bit about working in genre from screenwriting to being an author and how your voice has changed between those genres so that writers out there who are looking to reuse content that they've created as screenwriters into novels kind of have a jumping off point.
That is such an incisive and good question. The first thing to know is that they're different languages. They are completely different languages. Okay. They're related. But I speak Spanish and I remember I went to South America and I thought I was awesome because I was understanding people, you know, and I'm this white guy and I'm speaking Spanish. They're like, he's the wrong color, you know?
That's
and then
cool.
I run into this lady and I felt like I'd had a stroke or like she was talking drunk Spanish. I didn't understand it. And the person I was with, he's like, she's speaking Portuguese.
Oh.
And it drove me nuts because it sounded really similar, but I still didn't understand it. I had to learn Portuguese to understand this lady. And that is screenwriting and novel writing or vice versa. Now, it was much easier to learn Portuguese because they are really similar. So there's a jumping off point, but they're not, you know, you read a lot of movies written by the author and you're like, this is terrible. Because the author has a different skill set and vice versa.
Right.
And typically, if you see a movie written by the author and then you dig into their past, it's like, oh, well, they had 6 pages of IMDb credits before they wrote the book. Hunger Games is a good example. Like the author wrote the movie. She had a huge background in writing for TV and movies already.
Oh, nice.
So you have to learn that language. And then the other thing to remember is you can tell similar stories, but the point is different. And there's 3 basic kinds of writing, and those are prose, which is your novels and your fiction, there's screenplays, and there's screenwriting, and they have different points. So screenplays are always about the person versus the external world versus the outside.
Right.
Stage plays are about person versus person, which is why you can have 2 people sit on the stage and talk about a 3rd person who never shows up, and that's the whole play. And then books, prose tends to be about the person within themselves and against themselves. And that's even reflected in the way they're written. Like in movies, the biggest blocks are action. And in screen or in a stage plays, the biggest blocks are dialogue. And in books, the biggest blocks are internal narrative.
I love it.
So you have to have your position straight. Like, can you make Twister the musical? You can, but it's going to have certain hindrances, you know? And it's why, like, Spider-Man, let's make a musical out of it. Ooh, that is a mixed bag, you know? You've got the audience, and that's what they're looking for. So you do have that, but then you're like, we can only do it in this kind of theater. It has to have this kind of restrictions versus we're going to put on Waiting for Guffman, and we can do that in Broadway, or we can do it at a high school play.
Yeah.
And so that person's play is going to show in many more venues than Spider-Man or Twister the musical will. So when you're writing your book, like I wrote a very successful book called Strangers. It's actually outsold the first print run of Harry Potter. So it's done really well.
Nice.
And by the way, that's good to be able to take to a producer as well. If you do get some cash, you know, cachet behind you, you can be like, here's my sales numbers.
Yeah.
And be aware that Hollywood operates in millions and publishing works in thousands or tens of thousands, if you're lucky, hundreds of thousands.
Right.
So you're going to have to explain the differences, because they're like, you haven't sold 700 million copies. And you're like, no, the Bible hasn't sold that many copies yet. You have to explain to them. But once you do, and you're like, this puts me in the top 1% of 1% of 1%. And I've got a list of 30,000 people. And because I write horror, my books will cost, you know, $5 million to make.
Yeah.
And then you say, and Strangers has outsold Harry Potter's print run. They go, oh, tell me more. So right. I wrote the screenplay first, and it's very fun. And it's about this family that gets stuck in their homes, like literally sealed inside their own home by a serial killer who wants some alone time. And the book was all about the screenplay was all about the tension and the shadows and, oh, he's there. Oh, it's a hat rack, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I moved to a book, it had to be about internal stuff. So I really amped up the sense of sadness inside, because this family is dealing with the suicide of their son. It's the 1 year anniversary of their son's death.
Okay.
And now I have like a compelling inner monologue to go along. But if I had just transposed it word for word and then added some description to tell what the houseplants looked like, it's a crap book. So the first thing you have to learn the language, and then you have to learn the differences and how to kind of tease them out when you go from one to the other.
Michael Brent, that is so incredibly insightful. I'm really glad that you covered it. Thank you so much.
Got one right.
Yes.
That was my one for the week, folks.
Still got it. All right. So is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have?
Oh, my goodness. First of all, these were really awesome questions. And I usually talk a lot more about books, so this was a really delightful experience.
Thank you.
I do want to reiterate, it is hard, you know,
yeah.
Like people go, how did you work from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and then play with your family and then work from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m.? And I did that for a decade. And my answer was, I was cranky all the time. Like it's not like I was made to do it and it was super easy.
Right.
It was hard. And you have to have a support system. That's something I really encourage, especially because so many creatives have mental health problems. And I do. I have severe mental health problems.
I'm actually covering that in the next episode.
Okay. So major depressive disorder, suicidal ideation, psychotic breaks. I can still show up on time. I can still get the job done because I have a support system.
Yeah.
That keeps me from doing anything bad to myself and pushes me out the door. My wife will say some days, you need to go to the movies. You need a break.
I love it. I love that you have that. I mean, since you're throwing cards on the table, I got a little PTSD and anxiety over here. So, you know,
so many creative types do. We
it is what it is.
There's a reason we're typing voices in our head. People go like, oh, quarantine's so hard. I'm like, I've been living with the same voice in my head for 30 years and I don't even get a break to go to the bathroom. So shut up, you know?
Yeah.
We got to have that support system. So get that. Whoever you are, find someone who loves you enough to support you, who loves you enough to be cruel. You know, my wife is the first person to say, this page does not work.
That's good.
And I know she loves me. She's not tearing me down. She's like, how can you make it better? Is what she's saying. Go back there. You've got better in you, Michael Brent.
I love that.
And I do that. So you got to have a support system. You got to realize it is hard work. I mean, it took 10 years till I was making money and another 2 until I was making, you know, significant money.
Yeah.
And that was after the 20 years I spent writing. You know, that's just when it's the 10 years is when I actually first started making money, and I still made jack for 15 years kind of thing. So you have to be willing to put in the work. It is like building a coral. The Great Barrier Reef is miles long. You know, you can see it from space, but it's made up of single celled animals. And that's your writing career. You just build a little tiny bit at a time.
I love
and
that.
And people are like, they want to be the one hit. They want to come out of the gate with that perfect hit. That's an overnight success. But here's what happens to those people.
Yeah.
They're gone the next year. Because they agree. Don't know how to replicate it.
I don't want that for people. And I've told people, like, I pray you're not an overnight success, because if you are, you're going to burn out and people are going to demand from you what you're not able to deliver, because you haven't built the skill and the craft yet. Boom. If you are the overnight success, I pray that you're the person who's been writing for 12 years. And then all of a sudden everybody realized how amazing they are. That's the type of overnight success who builds a career, who becomes the next, you know, Michael Brent Collings. I appreciate you coming on the show. People can find you at writteninsomnia.com. Is there anything else?
Thank you again so much. Like, this was a genuine pleasure. It was fun for me to get up on a Saturday morning and talk to a human before I go back in my golem cave. So I really appreciate that. If you do want a free book, click the link bit.ly/mbcfree. And if you need to find me, you can just type in my first name, Michael Brent. It's all one word. I'm the only one in the world, so I'm very easy to find.
Hey, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter by using my handle @ScreenwriterPod. And if you liked the show, please support it by subscribing and sharing the episode on your social media.